Accession number 16427, Major Thomas Ward, Reel 12.
Major Ward, Reel 12. I'd like to ask you a bit more about the way in which the Moru was set up and operated. And you've got a diagram in front of me here, and at the centre is the plotting table. How big would the table be, do you think?
Well, not very big, really. If you think of the Battle of Britain, it was a tremendous set-up, wasn't it?
Well, they had permanent quarters.
Permanent quarters and so on, but this was mobile.
Yes.
So it is limited because it was in a vehicle.
So it had to be easily packed up.
Yes.
If the Moru had to move, how long would it take to pack it up, do you think?
Oh, not long. No, it was designed like that.
So you could just fold it up and put
it away. We had many moves, yes.
Would it take half a day or...?
Oh, no. It was... everybody had their job when we moved.
Yeah.
I was responsible for moving my unit.
Yes.
And we got that pretty smartly organised. And we're off.
But I mean, would it take you half an hour or 2 hours or...?
Well, it took a bit longer to close down the communication lines and things like that. I had several vehicles the VHF sets and so on.
Yes.
And each vehicle had three operators.
Yes.
And I had probably at the time I've got two juniors out, perhaps.
What would they be doing?
Be in touch with. I couldn't visit squadrons when we're in operation. For instance, at this Marath battle,
yes.
I had to be there. I had to be on
at the centre
on the job. Yes. So our juniors went out and. With the squadrons and then came back and reported about how they...
But you had permanent ALOs with all the squadrons, didn't you?
We've got to keep in touch with them. But, of course, we had communication with them. But communication was absolutely vital, And we had DRs and things like that, messages.
So you'd have more than one means of communication?
Yes.
To your...
Yes.
Okay. Now, around the plotting table, you've got a ground controller. What was his function?
Well, he... what was his function? In touch with the squadrons, the deployment of the aircraft and things like that, I would think.
Right.
Now, it's important that you don't line... I don't need to say it, perhaps... Line them all up in one row in case of any aircraft coming over. They've got to be
scattered
and dispersed. That kind of thing. And also, the fire tenders and things like that. And,
so he was concerned with the administration of aircraft on the ground
and I think so, yes.
Presumably the selection of sites for airstrips
That's right. You must remember also that if you're moving forward at the rate we were, it was from one airstrip to another, and we were really continuously on the move. See, they'd moved quite a lot while I'd been away in Kenya, but in stages. And they'd got pretty efficient from Al Alamein. You only got to do it three or four times, then it's a routine.
Then there's the air controller.
The air controller is talking to the aircraft, the pilot.
In the air?
Yes, the leader.
So presumably he could have a number of squadrons in the air simultaneously.
Now he's being called up by any aircraft in the area who's flying.
Right.
He's also briefing pilots.
Over the radio?
Over the radio, yes.
How many people would there be on the air controller's desk then?
He had a deputy, but always somebody there. Always somebody there.
Right.
Because if... it wasn't always. I was going to say, the atmosphere was always clear and everything. There was always a blue sky, but there wasn't really. You know, sometimes there was a sandstorm and that kind of thing. But
that must have interfered with communications.
It did, yes, yes. Well, it interfered with flying considerably. Mm.
Then there is GOR, brackets, AA, close brackets.
ACAC.
Would he be anti-aircraft?
Anti-aircraft liaison.
Yes.
Yes.
What would his job be? Would it?
Well, keeping in touch with his batteries. And in cooperation with the Air Force. After all, he's... Because he gets active if the enemy aircraft are active.
Presumably one of his main jobs would be to prevent our anti-aircraft guns firing on our own aircraft.
Well, that's one of the jobs.
Warning them of when...
One of the jobs, yes. Yeah. Keeping... Yes.
Yeah. Then there's a table called FBC. Forward Bomber Control, would that be?
Yes.
What would he be doing?
He's... that's the Boston Bombers.
So he's dealing with the medium.
He's dealing with the mediums. And possibly the Baltimores. We also had Mustangs. Mustangs.
Were they flown by RAF pilots or by Americans?
No. They came later, but... and a few. No, they were RAF. It was the...
And then there's... not immediately adjacent to the plotting table, there's the box marked intelligence.
Yes. That was receiving intelligence from Army headquarters and so on. These came to me.
That had been one of your functions, hadn't it, when when you were ALO with the South Africans?
That's right.
Had that now been detached from your functions?
No, I was very much involved in it, but enjoying the information from one of my ALOs, right, which I used to send.
And then there's another box behind...
Because you'll notice on the signals I've got here, which I actually, in my own handwriting, sent out, they're addressed to all concerned. So they don't only go to Army headquarters for information. They go to the wings and all the ALOs.
So you're pooling all intelligence.
Yes. Mm. And that's coming into me as well.
Right. Mm. So then you've got another box here, ALO. That's is that Army Liaison Officer or Air Liaison Officer?
Air Liaison Officer.
So that was the link to 8th Army, presumably.
Yes.
That was you on that. That particular box. How far away was 8th Army headquarters when you were doing the Marath battle?
Oh, well, a few miles actually, but that didn't matter. Didn't matter. It was the Army headquarters didn't move as quickly as the
Morrow
forward troops. Mm. No.
Presumably, you couldn't actually put them together because it would make too big a target for.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, I mean...
It was very... Montgomery's idea was that we'd be close together at El Alamein.
Yes.
Now, that couldn't remain the situation. They didn't move together. Mm. They leapfrogged a bit and so on. Mm. Depends what the situation is. But, and where the locations are. It isn't always...
What sort of location would you look for for the Morrow? What sort of location would you look for to put the Morrow on?
I don't know, behind a sand dune, I think. There wasn't much choice, was there? It was all pretty much similar.
Well, presumably you might find a wadi or something
yes,
like that
that's right, yes.
to hide in.
Well, not necessarily because of the aerials and so on.
Oh, right.
We had to be sure that we got the best reception, put it that way.
Mm. Did
it was fairly flat, I can tell you. It was fairly flat all over, yes. Right.
Did the Morrow ever come under attack by enemy aircraft or artillery?
No, don't think so. No.
Did you take measures to camouflage it?
Oh, yes. All the vehicles were camouflaged. First thing, as soon as we arrived, the nets go out.
Was there a large number of vehicles in the unit?
It was a good target. But by that time, bless them, the fighter bombers had done a great job.
So the Luftwaffe wasn't...
I say the great. Fighter bombers, they were not fighter bombers then, they were fighters, they were keeping the enemy aircraft at bay. Mm. At bay.
Mm. Roughly how many people would there be in the Morrow at any one time? When the centre was set up, I mean, it was an intelligence centre and an operation planning and control centre.
At Morrow, everybody had a key job.
Yes.
There were no, apart from a cook, and well, that's a key job, by Jove, yes.
Yeah.
But but there were no, there were drivers, of course, and there were dispatch riders, and yes, there were quite a lot.
Signallers and clerks,
yes,
and people like that.
It's surprising how many are needed.
Yeah.
But,
but it was an officer-heavy unit, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Well, yes, there was an officer in charge of each sort of section, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And we also had, I had, eventually, liaison officers from the artillery, from the tank regiment and that kind of thing, but not here.
Not at Maris.
Not there, no.
Later
no,
on.
No, that was a development, which was a good development. Because we could keep in close touch there. Mm. And then, of course, we operated in tanks in Italy. Mm. So that was very different.
But you were in soft-skin vehicles in the desert.
Yes, yes, yes.
What happened then during the Marath fighting? What sort of targets were the fighter bombers attacking? Were they attacking?
Well, there was bombing and strafing, watching German tanks and movement...
Mm.
And directing the fighter bombers onto the tanks behind buildings and that kind of thing. But the infantry had a difficult job.
Were you able to make any effective attacks on the fortified positions in the Marath line?
Well, before the Marath battle started, there was some bombing of that.
This was strategic bombing, though, wasn't
strategic
it? Heavy
bombing
by
yes,
four
that wasn't under. Close support.
Yes.
But knowing where the Germans were hiding. But it was very well-prepared positions. Mm. I think they just sat underground and took it. Mm. But we were pleased, I remember, with the air support at Marath. We were pleased about that. And so was... 8th Army Headquarters.
50th Division was involved, wasn't
yes.
it, in the fighting there?
So yes.
I mean, were you conscious that they were there, that
yes.
your old comrades were?
Yes, the East Yorks, the 5th East Yorks were involved and took casualties there. I have some details of that, which I'll show you later. Mm.
After the Marath battle was over, what happened next?
The Germans withdrew, reluctantly. We followed them with aircraft and did the most damage possible. But most of the withdrawal was during the night. And then we, of course, before the Marath battle, preparing for the next, where they would stop us. But I think I'm right in saying that the weather turned sour on us, I think, about this time. And our vehicles got bogged down, fancy, in the desert. Rain, and that delayed us quite seriously. And I think I'm right in saying that this helped the Germans because they were able to escape quicker.
Presumably, really heavy rain would restrict flying as well as your
that's right.
On the ground.
Yes, Something you don't expect in the Western Desert, but that happened.
But you're getting close to the mountains, weren't you, by this stage?
Yes, towards Tunisia. That must be the reason. But well, we'd been in the desert for such a long time, we hadn't really seen any rain. It's nice and refreshing, but it was serious because it delayed us. Mm.
Did you meet up with First Army?
We progressed into Tunisia, and well, the 8th Army met the First Army and shook hands with them. I remember seeing the pictures. I certainly wasn't in that. But before Tunisia fell, the Americans really got a hiding, because Rommel turned on them, possibly because they were new troops without any experience of fighting. Now that that relieved the pressure on the 8th Army. And there was a lull as far as the 8th Army was concerned, while the 1st Army dealt with the Germans. This was their last gasp, the Germans, and they must have known they were finished in Africa. But they certainly fought very well against the Americans, and the Americans were just not prepared for such a beating. But that wasn't the first hiding the Americans got. Of course, there was Italy to follow. Now, eventually, Tunis fell, and when it did, we were pulled back to Tripoli, onto the beach, Tripoli, where we spent 3 glorious weeks by the sea.
Was this just a holiday for you?
Well, no, it was. Well, yes. Yes, well, it was. We'd cleared them out of North Africa, so we deserved a rest, didn't we? But we knew then that we had to go to Malta and prepare for the invasion of Sicily. The object of going to Malta was to take our vehicles there and waterproof them, or get them waterproofed. And so we went to Malta. I'm talking about Morro now. And yes, and one or two other units.
Did you sail from Tripoli to go to Malta?
Yes. And we spent a few weeks at Malta and got our vehicles waterproofed, because we were going to invade Sicily in tank landing craft.
Did you do any exercises in loading and unloading from landing craft tank?
I didn't personally, no. But
the
transport officers did. Yes.
Oh, yes. So the drivers were
and practiced. The drivers, yes, yes. Now the battalions went from. Certainly the 5th East Yorks, they left from well, they must have gone from Tripoli, I suppose. And the Greenhowers. But well, Morro stayed in Malta, but I personally, with a skeleton, went off to Sicily in a tank landing craft as a sort of an advanced unit part.
Were you attached?
Not with the object of controlling fighter bombers or anything like that. With the object of being there and being in communication with Morrow and my ALOs, because they were they didn't know what to expect invading Sicily.
Now, so were you then a sort of recce party?
Well, not really. Well, yes, I'll just explain that it really it was interesting. Just a little while ago, there was a television program, and the invasion of Sicily was mentioned by Sarah Churchill, and she explained how worried her father was about the invasion of Sicily, because he'd been involved in the invasion of Gallipoli, which was a disaster. And she says, I'm sure he felt that it could be the same. The Germans in Sicily and the Italians fighting before they hadn't given up then, the Italians, but didn't know how strongly committed they were. It so happened that the landing was unopposed, which was a great relief. And the battalions got on without firing a shot. Before there was any reaction, Syracuse was taken as a port. And really there was negligible activity until the forward troops got to the Catania plain in Sicily. As far as I was concerned, I had my unit in a vineyard. A vineyard.
Do you know where you went ashore?
We went ashore in the... it was on the beach. Wasn't any name to the place, but it was the south-east corner of Sicily, if you know what I mean.
Did you get ashore... Easily, no problem. What the thing, did the landing craft touch down and?
Touched down and we walked in.
You walked ashore.
Yes.
Did you have no vehicles?
We had our vehicles with us. Yes, they came, but they were waterproof. That's why were waterproof.
But presumably they didn't need it if the thing.
Well, not really, but we didn't. I mean, we got our feet wet, if you like.
You did.
Yes, but
so you had to do a bit of paddling before. You
Well, yes, but. That was a great relief, but that was nothing. But we camped in bivouacs in a vineyard. All we had to do when we wakened up in the morning was to put our hand out of the bivouac and pluck a bunch of grapes, which are great. So for a while it was a life of luxury, if you might say. Really had very little to do the initial stages in Sicily, which was a surprise, but kept in touch with my unit in Malta, and they eventually came over, and we got established. They established landing strips and so on, and on the Catania plain, got bogged down, the forward troops, for quite a while. Quite surprised everybody. The object was to capture Catania, then clear the island of Germans and Italians. The Germans were in the middle of Sicily when we landed. The Americans landed further west and further north. And their objective was to make progress on the northern side of, along the northern side of Sicily towards Palermo. Our task was to progress over the Catania plain, capture Catania, and go around there. And then, of course, we've got Mount Etna in front of us. That was tricky, as it happened. And then finally get to Messina.
Were you able to give any close air support during the fighting on the plain of Catania?
A little, yes. Actually, as far as we were concerned, it was a pretty inactive time for Morrow. There was air control to do. It was mainly fighters, and of course, very important that we still kept air superiority. My own unit, the 5th East Yorks, were in the Catania plain, and with the others, and I found life very difficult towards the end because the Germans were very stubborn and didn't want to give Catania away, but did eventually. I think they must have got wind of the Italians' intentions, because the Italians were losing heart and giving up, beginning to. And
did you have any contact with the Italian army or Italian population in Sicily?
Not really. Not really. No. Apart from a few peasants. But Catania eventually fell, but there were casualties capturing Catania. And then the Italians started to ease off, and the General Patton determined to get to Palermo before the 8th Army, which he did. Then Messina fell, but the Germans who were fighting us, they all really escaped into Italy before, you know, gradually they... It was rather disappointing that it was impossible to cut them off.
Why was that? Wasn't it possible to bring air power to bear on the Messina Strait?
Well, yes, but it was a tricky operation round Mount Etna, which was tending to erupt at the time. And, well, eventually Sicily was cleared, and then our task was to, for the 8th Army, to go over the Messina Straits into Italy. And their objective, first objective, was to capture the airfields at Foggia, which, of course, would be ideal for the Desert Air Force to use, because they were fully equipped and everything.
Had you been able to set up many effective airstrips in Sicily?
Well, not really, no. They didn't... seemed to be the necessity, really. Although the Morrow moved over, 8th Army headquarters moved over. And it took about 2 months longer than they expected, the capture of Sicily, because of they got bogged down in the Catania plain. We crossed the Strait of Messina Straits at Reggio, and first thing we found were the Italians were hitching a lift, the soldiers.
going home.
Packing in. They were finished. I couldn't believe it when I first saw them because, I was so annoyed with Italians, I put two of them in the ditch because they were on the side expecting a lift. And I went very close to them when I was actually driving the Jeep. So, I didn't hurt them. But I'm afraid we found the Italians very exasperating, really.
Why was that?
The soldiers. I suppose they had a raw deal from the Germans because the Germans pinched all their vehicles in North Africa, and they were left high and dry, and of course became prisoners. But the Italians we met in the toe of Italy. And obviously, you know, they were supposed to be defending their country, and that's the very time when they gave up, because we were going into Italy. So I didn't have very much respect for them. But I suppose the same applied to us, to them. But there was very little opposition going towards Foggia. Eventually, Bari fell, which was a useful port for our supplies, instead of coming in Sicily, Syracuse, and up.
And all this time you were still with the Moro?
Still with Moro. And then it was the beginning of almost 2 years in Italy, going up from river to river.